You want real convenience food? Well, set your oven at around 275. Pick up the book Cooking Slow, Recipes for Slowing Down and Cooking More by Andrew Schloss. Check out what's in your fridge and pick a recipe that fits. Slide it into the oven and forget about it for a couple of hours. Now that's convenience. Most things that take to slow cooking also take to reheating, so you've got dinner for the rest of the week. Now, Andy Schloss is a rethinker. He takes nothing for granted, and he loves Sherlocking the science of a dish. Andy, good to have you back.
It's wonderful to be with you, Lynn.
So what is the difference between what happens when you cook slowly versus the usual way we normally cook?
All of cooking is a balance between temperature and time. As you start to lower temperatures and naturally extend time, because it just takes longer to cook it, you affect the way heat works with foods differently. And the most profound effect is in proteins. Meats will become done at a certain temperature. So a rare roast beef, for instance, is 130 degrees. If I'm roasting that beef in a 400-degree oven, the outside of the beef is getting well done. It's getting up to 400 degrees.
Right.
In order to get that center to be perfectly rare. If I have my oven set at 130 degrees, the entire beef is rare, and I get the juiciness all the way through, and the texture of the protein, the way it sets up is just very, very soft. You get a huge difference when you slow down that process and lower the temperatures.
Does it actually, I mean, it sounds like it's affecting the cellular structure of the meat.
Yes.
Is it that when those cells are heated very quickly or taken to a very high temperature, there's actually shrinkage that releases moisture?
Yes. Proteins will shrink up. They get tighter as they get hotter. You see this most like when you fry an egg or scramble an egg.
Uh-huh.
If you put the egg in the pan, you can see that the protein at first is clear and liquidy. And then as the heat affects it, it will start to tighten up and become white and opaque. And eventually, like if your pan is really hot when you put a fried egg in there,
right,
it almost turns to like a plastic at the edge. That's very overcoagulated protein. So if you never let that temperature get that high, the protein stays soft and succulent and tender the entire time.
So what happens with vegetables? Is it the same premise?
With vegetables, it is not as profound an effect. And it was interesting because one of the things I thought would be great in this book was roasting vegetables. And the roasted vegetables I like better cooked at a high temperature. So I ended up not doing a lot of roasted vegetables. An example of a vegetable that I did that was amazing were roasted carrots on coffee beans, which was a technique that I picked up from the restaurant Qua in San Francisco. And what happens there is you lay carrots on coffee beans, and the coffee at a very low temperature, the oils in the coffee beans emerge. They start to weep out of the coffee beans and infuse into the carrots. So it's different than a carrot rubbed with coffee or poached in liquid coffee. It almost is like it's inundated with the spirit of coffee. It's an amazing thing that happens. I also did that with beets, and it was wonderful.
It sounds incredible. I mean, it really does sound incredible. All right, but now we get to the issue that the danger area in temperatures where harmful bacteria could grow is between 40 and 140 degrees. And you have that meat sitting there very slowly getting to even below that temperature. So what about the safety issues, especially with proteins, of cooking very slowly?
Whenever you're dealing with a solid protein, with a solid piece of meat or something like that, all of those bacteria are on the surface of the roast. There's not a significant amount of bacteria interior in the muscle. And that's why in ground meat, it's much more of a problem, because in ground meat, the outside becomes the inside. But as long as the meat is a solid piece, that bacteria is on the outside. So whenever you're slow cooking roasts, you want to do some measure to alleviate the amount of bacteria on the surface of the meat. And that is either done through browning, just in a pan before you put it in the oven, or you can start it at a very high oven. I usually, if I'm doing that, I'll start at 425 and let it go for 30 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
So the surface becomes at least up to 200, 300 degrees before I lower the temperature. Or sometimes with with like poultry, where I don't want to brown it a lot first, I will salt the meat, or I can do this with roast too. Put a good amount of salt on the surface of the meat and let it sit in the refrigerator overnight, which will subside the amount of bacteria on the surface,
right.
And you wipe that salt off, and it seasons the meat as well.
Okay. You do something in the book that's really unusual. You slow bake desserts. How does that work?
Well, this was something I discovered because I'm lazy. I discovered this. I used to work in restaurants when I was younger, and I always wanted to have something cooking while I was sleeping. And I was thinking about, I had a lot of cheesecakes on my menu at that point. And cheesecakes are just custards where instead of having milk as your liquid, you have cream cheese as your liquid, or ricotta cheese, or whatever your dairy is in the custard. All the recipes I had ever seen baked the cheesecake in a water bath. And the purpose of baking in a water bath is it keeps the median temperature around the food at 212 degrees maximum. So I was thinking, why can't I just set my oven at 200 degrees and then I don't need a water bath? I did that, and it was amazing because the cheesecake never overcooked. You know how the edges of a custard will get sort of grainy?
Yeah,
as
yeah.
Because they'll get hotter than the center will.
Yeah.
This didn't happen. It was perfect from middle to edges. So I started doing custard-like desserts, puddings, cheesecakes, cream pies, fruit cakes, things that don't require a lot of gluten production to raise the cake, and lowering those temperatures. And it worked amazingly. The one thing when you do that, when you're lowering your oven temperature down to 200 or even like 180 degrees to set the batter, the baking time starts to extend. And these cheesecakes that I was doing, it turned out that they took about 8 hours to get done, which was about the amount of time that I slept. So I realized that I could just, at the end of the night, stick the cheesecakes in the oven, go home, go to sleep, come back in the morning, and I'd add desserts for the restaurant.
I love this. Andy, thank you. Great ideas.
Wonderful talking to you, Lynn.
Andrew Schloss is author of Cooking Slow, Recipes for Slowing Down and Cooking More. Now, that recipe for carrots slow-cooked on coffee beans, it's amazing. And you can find it on the website, splendidtable.org.